The briefing is brought to you in association with the Sustainable Cities in Action Forum at Expo City Dubai. The Sustainable Cities in Action Forum at Expo City Dubai is a place for city leaders, developers, architects and designers to come together and innovate for the future of urban spaces. It's an opportunity for the Global South to convene in the Global South. It's a testbed for real-world solutions that will shape the future of people and planet. You can hear from the innovative thinkers and inspirational voices that drove the narrative at this year's edition by listening to Monocle's special episodes of The Briefing, recorded live at Expo City Dubai in March. Find and listen to the shows now at monocle.com or wherever you get your podcasts. The Sustainable Cities in Action Forum 2024. Collaborate, innovate, transform.
You're listening to The Briefing, broadcast on the 22nd of November 2021 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Briefing, coming to you live from Dufourstrasse 90, Monocle's newsroom in Zurich. I'm Emma Nelson, and coming up today.
Today marks the first day of Austria's latest lockdown, just days after the previous one. That lockdown was for the unvaccinated only, but it was so divisive that the government decided to extend it to the entire population.
We'll have a series of reports from across Western Europe as citizens fight back against plans to reintroduce strict COVID-19 measures. Also ahead, regular Monocle 24 contributor Florian Egli will join me in the studio for a roundup of stories making news here in Switzerland, plus the business headlines, and Fernanda Augusta Pacheco peruses the Latin American press. Hello, Faye, what have you seen?
Hello, Emma. Today we discuss the results of the first round of the Chilean presidential election, plus Santa is back in Brazil.
And he's wearing a red mask. Much more from him a little bit later on. That's all coming up right here on The Briefing with me, Emma Nelson. And a very warm welcome to the programme. Austria has returned to a full national lockdown as protests against new restrictions aimed at curbing COVID-19 infections spread across Europe. Austrians have been asked to work from home again and non-essential shops have now closed. Monocle's correspondent in Vienna, Alexei Korolev, sent us this report.
Today marks the first day of Austria's latest lockdown, just days after the previous one. That lockdown was for the unvaccinated only, but it was so divisive, so politically explosive, that the government decided to extend it to the entire population. This makes epidemiological sense too. Austria's infection rate is at its highest level since the start of the pandemic, and its healthcare system is stretched. But tempers were already so high, they were bound to spill over. And that's exactly what happened on Saturday, when tens of thousands of demonstrators flooded central Vienna. Their argument was not with the idea of lockdown, now that everyone is affected, but with the government's plans to introduce compulsory vaccinations. That is something that even the experts find unsettling. But Chancellor Alexander Schallenberg insists this is the only way out of restrictions.
We have too many political forces in this country who are vehement.
Speaking on Friday, he said there were too many political forces and too much fake news confusing Austrians. The vaccine mandate is due to come into force from February, but details are yet to be finalised. And the nationwide lockdown, the first by an EU country this winter, will last for a maximum of 20 days. For Monocle in Vienna, I'm Alexei Korolev.
Thank you very much indeed, Alexei. Well, attempts to reintroduce restrictions have also sparked protests in other parts of Western Europe, including Belgium and the Netherlands. Here's Monocle's correspondent in the Netherlands, Charlotte MacDonald-Gibson.
It has been a very tumultuous weekend here in the Netherlands. The trouble began on Friday night in Rotterdam, where a few hundred protesters gathered in demonstrations which quickly turned violent. The Dutch government had actually announced their new three-week lockdown light in response to rising COVID cases a week earlier. But the spark that really set off the fresh unrest this weekend was the announcement on Friday that they would be banning the annual New Year's Eve fireworks display for a second year in a row. This comes as the government has been discussing banning unvaccinated people from some venues. So these two discussions, events, really sparked the unrest that we saw. In Rotterdam, it was really quite dramatic. The police opened fire on protesters at one point, injuring 3. The unrest spread to The Hague on Saturday night. Here we saw bicycles piled at a major intersection being burnt. There were fireworks being tossed at police and property destroyed. Last night, on Sunday night, the unrest continued. There were protests in the city of Groningen. Near the German border, a state of emergency was declared. And in the southern city of Rosendal, a primary school was set on fire. So it does continue. The tensions are ongoing. However, despite the drama of the images we see from the Netherlands, it is worth pointing out that the vaccination rate here is very high compared to other European countries. 84% of the adult population is vaccinated. So this anti-vaccination, anti-lockdown movement, although very vocal, it is reasonably small. However, the issue in the Netherlands is the idea of personal freedom, personal liberty, that's really ingrained in the mindset and the culture here. So this is the balance the government has to strike as it looks ahead to the difficult few weeks. This is Charlotte McDonnell-Gibson, Monocle's correspondent in the Netherlands.
Thank you very much indeed, Charlotte. Well, let's examine this further now with Monocle's news editor, Chris Chermak. He's in our studio in London. And our editorial director, Tyler Brulé, who joins me around the microphone here in Zurich. Hello to you both.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Tyler, let me begin with you. There seemed to be a sort of tipping point that happened this weekend, didn't there? Where that issue where people went to the streets to talk about personal liberties, perhaps in a way that I don't think we've seen before.
No, certainly if we look at the images out of the Netherlands, we saw snippets of this, but it was maybe a different type of dialogue. And what's curious, I think, if you look at the Netherlands, Austria, people are sort of unified on both sides as to, I got vaccinated, I don't want to get vaccinated. We don't want to be locked up anymore as well. I think that's been a big part of the narrative that we've seen, and of course now you've got, of course, some of the biggest economies in Europe, those that are really at the core of all of this. You know, whether we're looking to Germany, I was supposed to be in Germany today, as you know, we said sort of, you know, our goodbyes yesterday evening, and I was supposed to be on my way to Munich, and already there you're seeing, you know, on one part, of course, you've got Mr. Söder's government, of course, proposing certain measures. We're seeing that the Christmas markets are going to be canceled, etc. But also a lot of companies now already second-guessing, putting their measures in place as well. So we have to be looking at Germany. We have to be looking at what's going to unfold in France. And so I think we have a rather sort of nervous, I wouldn't even say it's 5 days. I'd say sort of by midweek, I think sort of Wednesday, Thursday, we'll know what the rest of this Christmas season is going to look like, at least at the heart of the continent.
Chris, just looking at what has happened in Austria and how it affects the rest of Europe. This lockdown in Austria suggests that the assurance that being double vaccinated means the end of harsh societal restrictions, that's gone away now, doesn't it? The vaccines are working, but they're not stopping COVID.
That's right, Emma. And I think to jump off of what Tyler was saying there, part of the issue now becomes for countries like Austria, but then countries, other countries in Europe as well, is how much do you sort of push for a divide in the measures and the restrictions between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated. Austria, the chancellor, as we also heard a bit from Alexei there, really felt like he had no choice at this point but to impose a lockdown on everybody, simply because of the amount of people in hospitals and sort of reaching this sort of peak level in Austria. But at the same time, the key question really going forward is more also about, well, what do you do with those people who are unvaccinated? Austria is going to introduce a full mandate requiring Austrians to get vaccinated starting in February. And that's really also where this tension that, Tyler, you were speaking of, there's that tension there as well. Also in Germany, there's this question now of like, well, what do you do with those people who are unvaccinated? Do you require it? Is that even legal? Should there be more restrictions just on unvaccinated? One of the questions in Austria as well is, even after 20 days of a full lockdown, they're going to continue most likely a lockdown for the unvaccinated. So a lot of countries are really trying to figure out what the best version of these restrictions are. A number of other countries are also going for unvaccinated restrictions, whether it's Slovakia, Czech Republic, Greece, all have introduced additional measures this week, specifically targeting the unvaccinated. And there's a question of whether that can really go forward,
it's a difficult,
continuing as well.
It's a difficult issue, isn't it, Tyler, when it comes to decisions which are in businesses' best interests as well. We've looked at what's happened in Italy and France. They had an incredibly strict vaccine passport system earlier in this summer. They are now reaping the rewards because they have high immunisation rates. We're in a live studio, by the way, here in...
Yeah, we have some loud Australians barging through the studio. But anyway, that's
so
it.
So back to where we were just in case anybody wondered what was happening. But we had the French and the Italians imposed incredibly strict restrictions on people. You couldn't go to work without a passport. In Italy. What does that do for business leaders who want to make sure that people can, will and do want to go to work, but then there's this difficulty of the, I need to express my liberty and my decision, my choice not to be vaccinated if I so wish.
Well, I think we have a lot of listeners right now who are business owners, or they're certainly managing businesses and are probably feeling that this, again, this tension that you have between, of course, just keeping your business ticking over on one side, and then, of course, managing all of the concerns of people in the office, those who want to be, you know, be in a regular office, those who want to be in the home office. And then, of course, you know, the anxieties that come with, you know, potential infection. The fact that people have to, you know, get on public transport to get to work. Maybe they're not so concerned about what's going to happen in the workplace, because within that environment, of course, there are many companies which are demanding that people are vaccinated. So in many ways, what we're talking about is actually a distraction, Emma. It's a distraction away from business at a time of year when, of course, people want to get their numbers in line for how 2021 meant. But also, this is a time of forward planning as well. This is, you know, again, we come out of we come off the back of a very difficult year. This should be a moment when companies are looking at what are they going to do across Q1, Q2. Very difficult, of course, to do any type of planning. And then, you know, you've probably got the brain capacity of any manager, which, you know, once upon a time was supposed to be sort of the entrepreneurial part of their head, looking for new business opportunities, shoring up existing business as well. And now that is occupied by, you know, in one part being part-time epidemiologist, also doing maybe a bit of extra HR work as well. So I think that's the biggest component, that it is this enormous diversion for so many companies when they really have to be solely focused on their bottom line.
How are companies reacting to what's happening in Austria, Chris? We have very strong images of people going for their last trip around the Christmas markets yesterday before they had to go home and hunker down. But obviously that inflicts an enormous blow in December, which is a huge moment of tourism for Austria. But as Tyler was mentioning, how does a country which could be just tipping back into lockdown after lockdown even plan for the next year?
Well, it is incredibly hard, isn't it? And I mean, this was to go back to this discussion between also unvaccinated and vaccinated, what you do in a lockdown. Already last week, there was a big, protest, sort of complaints from businesses in Germany, who particularly focused on the fact that, you know, this is the Christmas period. This is such an important period for them that even having the unvaccinated not allowed into businesses was a significant blow. Now you've, of course, gone to the next step as of this week for 3 weeks in such a crucial period for so many retailers ahead of Christmas. That's really what the key is, in addition to this planning, as you talk about, for next year. And so I think one of the biggest questions for businesses at this point is they're really trying to also seek assurances that this is a short measure and get that certainty, as Tyler was speaking of as well. All of this is also about the uncertainty for businesses about what the way forward is. They want to have, at the very least, the certainty that this is short, it's 3 weeks, it will definitely end after that, and that there will be a plan for the Christmas period after that and going forward into 2021 to ensure that this does not happen again.
Just before we go, I think one other thing we're going to see off the back of what Chris is saying is, you know, could we also be looking at a Europe truly divided? And this goes back to your business question as well. You know, will we see some countries dig their heels in and say, look it, we can, you know, rewind 9-10 months ago and see what happened where these severe measures went into place. We can also look at other countries where they did not impose draconian measures, you might argue, and what was sort of the net result? And I think, you know, there's an interesting piece in the NZZ in Switzerland today, which really talks about maybe that little triumvirate of Denmark, looking at Switzerland, looking at Sweden, where things were more liberal. And then, of course, you know, then you look to Germany as well. And how did everyone end up? Well, everyone sort of ended up in the same place. Therefore, you might see some countries which, you know, will choose not to go down the path of more lockdowns.
Our editorial director, Tyler Brulé, thank you. And thank you to Chris Chermak, our news editor in our studio in London. The time is just coming up to 12:13 in London, 13:13 here in Zurich. A quick summary now of the latest news headlines. Here's Emma Sell.
Five people have been killed and more than 40 injured after a car ploughed into a parade in the US state of Wisconsin. Footage shows a red SUV driving through a Christmas parade in Waukesha, a city to the west of Milwaukee. Police are attempting to establish the cause of the major incident. Chile will contest a polarized presidential election runoff next month after the hard-right candidate José Antonio Kast emerged on top following yesterday's first round of voting. Centre-right candidates also performed strongly, which is a potential boost for Kast ahead of the runoff on the 19th of December. China's President Xi Jinping has told leaders of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations that Beijing would not bully its smaller regional neighbours. The comments come amid rising tension over the South China Sea. Beijing's territorial claims over the sea clash with those of several Southeast Asian nations. And today marks the launch of CNN Portugal, a 24-hour news channel, hoping to become one of the country's most important sources of information. You can find out more about the significance of the partnership between WarnerMedia and Portugal's media capital by heading to monocle.com/minute. Those are the day's headlines. Back to you, Emma, in Zurich.
Thank you very much indeed, Emma, in London. We're going to get a roundup now of the stories making news in Switzerland with our regular Monocle 24 contributor, Florian Egli. Florian is senior associate at the Swiss foreign policy think tank Voraus, and he joins me here in Zurich. Hello, Florian. Good to have you with us.
Hello, Emma.
Right, let's begin with a very strong business-related story that's in the Tages-Anzeiger today. We were talking a moment ago about the decisions and the complicated paths that businesses have to tread in this resurgence of COVID. But one company has decided to strike out on its own in terms of the admissions policies.
Yes, indeed. And I think it reflects well what Tyler has said before in terms of companies trying to second guess what's happening. So this weekend, actually, the first event was publicly announced that is officially 2G. So tests not allowed. So you have to either be vaccinated or you have to have been tested positive with COVID.
And I'd just ask you to explain to us, see those who might not know what 2G and 3G is, what the system is in Zurich or in Switzerland.
In Switzerland it's 3G, which is geimpft, genesen or getestet, which means either vaccinated or tested positive in the past or tested negative now, right?
Okay.
And so in Austria, that's a huge debate in Germany as well of whether to take away that third G, so that testing G. And Switzerland, there is clearly no majority for that. Also, the experts are advising against for the moment. Even one of the most vocal experts, Christian Althaus of the University of Bern, who was always a very strong supporter of very strict measures and even quit the official task force because it was too lax, in his opinion. So even he is against this now. But yet still, you know, Bilanz, the major business magazine in Switzerland, is launching this event on 2nd of December where negatively tested people will not be admitted. So you have to be vaccinated or you have to have had COVID in the past. And one of the guests is even a vocal opponent of the certificate. So I just think that this is going to stir a lot of controversy as to what extent, you know, businesses are free to be more strict, to be stricter than the general rules.
Because they are striking out alone with this decision.
They are. The first of its kind. Yeah.
Is the theory that if you can only go in if you're either recovering or vaccinated against COVID, that it actually is a stricter policy than merely a test?
That is the idea. But as I said, experts are really not so sure whether that's actually stricter or not. So I think it's really also a political sign to some extent to be stricter. Whether it is really stricter on the ground is really doubtable, I think, and the effectiveness of these measures is doubtable too. But perhaps again, to speaking to what Tyler has said, you know, again, somebody had to make these decisions. So you see CEOs of these companies or here a business magazine actually asking themselves a lot of these questions of how to, you know, host events or how to open up stores and businesses to people so that people are actually feeling confident attending and going there. And so, you know, placing stricter rules than overall might be one of the things that people think they can attract more people into their businesses or to their events.
Let's look at a campaign now by one of the oldest organizations in Switzerland to get everybody to What is it? Enough of hostility, threats and violence, better constructive than aggressive. There's a non-profit society telling everybody in Switzerland to be nicer to each other. What is that all about, please, Rory?
So this is just an amusing story that has caught my eyes, because at the top of the show we've heard bicycle piles up in the Netherlands, so that must be about the maximum of rage in the Netherlands, right, if bicycles pile up. So I think, everything around these COVID restrictions or policies is still very civilized in Switzerland. We've had demonstrations of just 2,000 people outside the city center in Zurich yesterday. So that was about as angry as it gets. And yet the Swiss Society for the Common Good, which owns the Rütliwiese, which funny enough is, the alleged place where the three Alpine cantons in 1291 swore the oath of the Confederation. So it's a very, mystical and historical place where also the National Day is celebrated prominently, etc., etc. So this institution that owns this kind of founding place of Switzerland has now issued a call for more tolerance, for more respect, and for more dialogue. And already, I think about 20,000 people have signed it. It was all across the newspapers, the TV, there are ads everywhere. And I just find it striking that even in such a civilized kind of situation as we are now, I would argue, in Switzerland, there is really already this civil engagement coming up and organizations popping up trying to, remind everybody to be polite and to discuss, without accusing the other side. So I just think it's a nice picture of this country.
Florian, thank you so much for joining us. That was Florian Egli from the Swiss think tank Voraus. You're listening to The Briefing on Monocle 24. And you're back with The Briefing live on Monocle 24 from Dufourstrasse in Zurich with me, Emma Nelson. Welcome back. Let's get an update now on the markets from Bloomberg's Ewan Potts. Good afternoon, Ewan.
Hi, Emma.
Good to have you with us. Talk to us about fuel prices and the price of crude.
Yeah, the world has an inflation problem. This is a problem not just in Switzerland, but across Europe and across the world. And one of the reasons for that, one of the key components, is rising fuel prices. Gas prices in the US, always a contentious issue, are very much in the news at the moment. Well, there's a little bit of good news on that front. Oil prices dropped almost 6% last week. Now, there's speculation that the US will release its strategic petroleum reserve. Plenty of talk that Biden will do this. It's been discussed for weeks so far, and it hasn't actually happened yet, but there is still speculation that it could happen. But today we had reports in Japanese local media that Japan is thinking of coordinating a release of some of its petroleum reserves with the US. It was also discussed with the Chinese government at the recent summit. Now, Japan's Oil Stockpiling Act doesn't allow for the sale of reserves due to high prices, but the Japanese government and the private sector currently have more reserves than the minimum required under the law. So that does allow a little bit of leeway, perhaps, to release some of those reserves. One of the other things which is weighing on the oil price, keeping prices down from that October peak, is Europe's battle with COVID. Of course, Austria going into lockdown today, and talk of more restrictions, particularly on the unvaccinated in Germany and other European countries. So there are worries over the course of this winter that Europe will be facing another nasty COVID season. But that would mean oil demand would be hit like it was last year. And that, of course, helps to bring down the price. So perhaps a little bit of relief on the oil front.
A little bit of relief, but people are already talking about oversupply and complaining.
Well, indeed. It's interesting when you listen to OPEC, of course, they've had a lot of pressure on them to produce more to help bring down that oil price. But they've so far resisted. Of course, they're quite happy that the price has been ticking up. It's been a pretty difficult couple of years for oil producers with that oil price, which was very, very low during the pandemic. So they're pleased that it has been going up, but it is adding to the world's inflation problem. The prices of things right across the economy are going up. And oil, of course, is one of those things which affects the price of many other things in the economy, because everything has to be transported and it's instrumental in producing plastics and other materials. So a little bit of relief on the oil front, I think, will be very, very welcome.
Let's talk a little bit about TIM, Telecom Italia. What's happening to them?
Yes, so just under 11 billion euros. That's the offer from US private equity giant KKR for the ailing Telecom Italia. Now, this could rank as one of the biggest takeover purchases, one of the biggest telecoms purchases ever in Europe by a private equity firm. It is certainly not a done deal, though. Bloomberg understands that Telecom Italia's biggest shareholder, Vivendi, the French group, is currently unlikely to support the offer. It says that it views it as undervaluing the company. It's been a pretty tough few years for Telecom Italia. The company's been attempting to turn around its business, issued a surprise profit warning last month. But this intervention by Vivendi, as we understand it, could be a bit of a problem. One analyst called it an insurmountable obstacle. The French company owns 24%, almost a quarter of Telecom Italia. So without their support, quite tricky to get this through. The Italian government has welcomed the takeover. Mario Draghi saying that the interest from KKR is good news for the country, but it's up to the market to assess the quality of the bid. The Italian government, I think, is concerned about Telecom Italia's ability to roll out fast broadband, so essential in the modern economy. So it is looking for a way forward for the Italian giant. It's had a pretty tricky period recently. It's actually the worst performing stock on the FTSE MIB over the past 6 months. It'll be interesting to see where this bid takes us.
Ewan, thank you as ever for joining us on the programme. That was Bloomberg's Ewan Potts with us on the briefing on Monocle 24. Just a few minutes left on today's programme to look at some of the Latin American newspapers with Monocle's senior correspondent Fernanda Augusta Pacheco. Good afternoon, Fernanda, joining us, keeping the fires burning in London.
Absolutely. Good afternoon, Emma. And of course, this is a big day for Latin America. The big story there is, of course, the first round of the Chilean presidential election. Of course, La Tercera, one of Chile's main papers. That's the main story. And I have to say, Emma, I'm not entirely surprised by the result, but nevertheless, I mean, for people that have been following Chilean politics, people thought they were going kind of in a more progressive way, they were voting a new constitution. But, you know, the first place in the first round is a far-right candidate. His name is José Antonio Kast, and some people say that he's Chile's Bolsonaro. Of course, there are some differences between both of them, but not that much, so I am fairly surprised. He's going to the second round with Gabriel Boric, former student leader and of the left as well.
So this was no great surprise. I think we were preempting that this was going to happen, that Boric would be second, but it divides Chile so clearly, doesn't it? Because you have one man on the right who is being directly compared with Bolsonaro, so you can just make of that what you will. But on the left, you have Gabriel Boric, former student leader, working closely with the communists and pushing Chile in a very left direction as well.
Yes, completely different. The centrist candidates, they didn't do very well, Emma. But nevertheless, I think both Kast and Boric, they will need their votes. But the interesting story of this election actually is the third place. His name is Franco Parisi. He's kind of he's an economist, but he's more to the right as well, very much a populist. He got 12.8% of the vote. And the strange thing here, Emma, he was campaigning the whole time he was in the United States. He didn't set foot in Chile a single time during the whole campaign. But he still got, you know, quite a lot of votes, and people were surprised by that. I have a feeling that Parisi voters will go to Kast, but we don't know. I think it'll be a very disputed and heated second round on the 19th of December.
Let's have a little bit of lightness, shall we? Father Christmas is back in Brazil. Not that he ever went away, but he's making appearances again. But he's wearing red masks in shopping centres.
He is. I mean, there are a few restrictions, but, you know, I'm happy to say Folha de São Paulo is reporting that Santa Claus, you know, he's back in São Paulo. And Emma, this is very important. You know, I grew up in Brazil, as you know, of course. And in Brazil, I mean, we love Santas. They are everywhere. In my opinion, more than here in Europe or the UK, because everywhere you go, there's a Santa wearing the traditional outfits. He's not wearing shorts. Sometimes he is, but, you know, most of the the time he's wearing clothes. And every single shopping center in São Paulo, you know, there's Santa Claus. It's a big, and I think every shopping center, they want to do an even more extravagant one. Sometimes there's the Mama's Santa Claus. How do you call it, actually? I completely forgot. How do you call that in English?
Well, it's Mrs. Claus. But frankly, Fernanda, that you've just said something which has set my little head on fire. You said that normally, most of the time, they're wearing clothes.
Oh, my God.
Which has made me wonder what happens at other moments.
Don't quote me on that, actually. But the interesting thing
is it suitable for children?
It is. I guarantee you that. The one interesting thing: the city of São Paulo, at least, almost 100% of all adults have been vaccinated. So I think this will be a very different Christmas and New Year in Brazil. Of course, we suffered horribly because of COVID, but you know things are actually going well when it comes to vaccination rate, and that's one of the reasons why Santas are back as well.
Is it good to have a good story coming out of Brazil? Because I think for a long time now, the narrative has been going in completely the opposite direction. It takes Christmas to solve the problems.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if I may have a quick time to say another good news from Brazil, actually. São Paulo Fashion Week ended over the weekend. And again, it's a return after 2 years. There was no Fashion Week, there were no catwalks because of COVID. But now it's back and it's colorful. There's been quite a lot of celebration of the Afro-Brazilian culture. One designer, Isaac Silva, he's fantastic. His clothes is incredibly colorful and bouncy. Amazing designers, and it is the most important fashion week in South America. So it's very good for, you know, the business of the city, for our fashion industry. So, you know, Santas and fashion, what else do we need, right?
Nothing apart from you, Fernanda Agostofcheca. Thank you so much for giving us the South American papers. And that's all we have time for today's edition of The Briefing. Many thanks to all my guests and to our producers, Rhys James and Emma Searle. Our studio manager in London was Christy Evans, and Desiree Bentley was looking after the sound here in Zurich. The Briefing is back at the same time tomorrow. That's 1300 CET here in Zurich, midday in London, 9 a.m. if you're listening in Santiago. I'm Emma Nelson for now. Goodbye. Thank you very much for listening. Have a great week.